It is Tuesday, January 29th, 2019. This is Ozarks at Large, and this is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. It's 6 minutes after 12. Good afternoon. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, I needlessly add years to John Jeter's age. You've been at the Fort Smith Symphony 26 years.
22 years. This is my 22nd.
I'm sorry.
Yes, okay.
That's right, 22. It's okay. All right. John Jeter, the musical director and conductor of the Fort Smith Symphony, will be with us to talk about the critically praised new CD recorded by the symphony. It's been featured on All Things Considered and in the New York Times. A conversation with John in about 15 minutes. Later this afternoon on 91.3 on NPR's Here and Now, we know children with disabilities are at an increased risk of bullying, but some parents say it's adults who are abusing them. That story. The latest from Washington and the rest of the day's news on Here and Now, beginning at 1 this afternoon, right after today's Ozarks at Large on 91.3. Ruthie Foster and the University of Arkansas Inspirational Chorale will perform together tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Jim and Joyce Faulkner Performing Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus. The concert is produced in conjunction with the Walton Arts Center and the 2019 Black Music Symposium Week. Tickets are $10 to $20. You can find out more at faulkner.uark.edu. The Arkansas Coding Academy, a program of the Division of Outreach and Community Engagement at the University of Central Arkansas, is opening a campus in Fayetteville this spring. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Mary Condit was hired as the director of the Arkansas Coding Academy in July 2016, and they welcomed their first class of students the following month. She describes the academy as an alternative educational path for adults.
We take students who have little to no knowledge about software development, and we put them through either a 3-month full-time course or a 6-month part-time course where they learn core concepts in software development. And at the end, they are a junior-level developer or an entry-level developer. They get a certificate of competency and hopefully a lot of soft skills to go along with that, and they can go out into the workforce and become software developers. So we are just a non-credit extension of the University of Central Arkansas in hopes of connecting the talent pipeline to local employers.
Since opening, the academy has had 80 graduates. Condit says there are no prerequisite courses required to enter the institute. Anyone who is over 18 and has a GED or high school diploma is welcome to apply.
The cool thing about what we do, to me anyway, is that I believe the people who benefit the most from our program fit into three categories. So think of someone who is underemployed, someone who is unemployed, or someone who is unhappily employed. So those are typically the three categories that we see students fitting into when they come looking for alternative paths to education.
Students enrolled in the academy full-time attend class from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, for 13 weeks. Upon completion of the program, Condit says students may find various employment opportunities. For example, some may wind up in a maintenance role.
So there may be an existing code base that a company has because they're selling some sort of product or they're working with clients that have existing code bases, and you may be in there fixing things or making sure things are working properly. It's a great position to be in as a junior level developer because typically you're not going to set anything on fire, which is nice, but at the same time, you have the ability to really dig into some code and understand the business principles behind that product. The other thing that we also see some students doing is what I would call a shiny new toy development, right? So you're working on things like from the ground up with a team, and you may not be working what we would call in production, but you may be working on something to send to those who would work on it in production.
The Arkansas Coding Academy already has campuses in Conway and Little Rock. The Institute will open its Fayetteville campus in May. Condit says Northwest Arkansas is an amazing region, but one of the things that sealed the deal for her in terms of expanding to Fayetteville was the support from the city and the mayor's office.
They really welcomed us with open arms, and I love that they kind of took us and they were like, yes, we'd love to be the place that you have these classes. And the other thing is support from employers in the city at Fayetteville. They, again, welcomed us with open arms and with feedback on making sure that we can be as successful as possible. So we're really excited about being in Fayetteville and being accepted so wildly.
Devin Howland, Director of Economic Vitality for Fayetteville, says the Academy is a great boon for the city because workforce development is a major problem nationally.
Not only if we look at the labor force participation rate, all the data points towards there are not good things coming ahead. And we're starting to see that. You're seeing the market respond to that. I think there's it's very timely that you see an announcement from Walmart saying they're going to pay truck drivers $90,000. It's because they can't find them. And so when the market responds to that and there's disparity between completions, how many individuals are getting these skills versus the job openings, and there, you have a big gap in between, you need every tool in the book to be able to work to close that gap.
Because the Academy can create employability over the course of a three-month period, Howland says it's a perfect match for the needs of the region.
This is a big add value to the region. It's an alternative education pathway, but it really, what it means to us is it moves that needle of equitable economic development because it provides a low barrier, short-term, extremely cost-effective program that somebody could go through without obtaining any debt, and they have an 82% job placement rate after graduation. That's incredible. It really is.
The full-time program will run May 13th through August 2nd at the Fayetteville campus. Tuition is $6,500, which includes books and a laptop students keep upon completion of the program. The location of the Arkansas Coding Academy's Fayetteville campus will be announced in the coming weeks. Applications are open, and prospective students can apply at arkansascodingacademy.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Last Tuesday, John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offered his prediction for the then-still-continuing partial federal government shutdown during his regular weekly conversation with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics. Brummett thought at that time the Democrats were going to have to meet President Trump with some negotiated offers to end the shutdown. That conversation was before Friday afternoon's White House announcement. So this Tuesday, Roby asked John Brummett about what's happened since last week's conversation.
The big losers were Donald Trump, Jared Kushner, and me for having sat right here on an installment that I wish we could take down off the internet and say, you know, the Democrats need, this landscape's going to change, and as this thing goes on, they're going to have to give him something, do a little negotiation. Nancy Pelosi knows that stuff better than I. This was as clear, and you had it pretty much right. You said, I think something's going to break and the Congress is going to have to work out something and we'll see if the president accepts it, which is exactly what I heard you say, which is exactly what happened. So congratulations to you on having some balance.
Just don't start calling me grasshopper. That's all I ask for. So tell me why you think it worked out the way it did. Why did the gambit play out that way?
Well, see, this is what pundits do. They get it wrong, but then when it's over, they explain why it worked out that way. But it's all obvious now. First, Trump did own the shutdown. He declared that he owned the shutdown. The polls were all against him. 55% blamed him. 35 or so blamed Democrats, which is just his base. He was obviously weakening. He was the one going on TV and saying, "Hey, I'll do something for the Dreamers," or "Hey, okay, I won't give
my." Hey, I'm staying in the White House all weekend. I'm just over here if you guys want to talk.
Boss lady, I'll give my State of the Union whenever you say I can. And so he was steadily weakening as you look back at it, and then, as you probably understood, and that all of us should have understood, this can't go on indefinitely. You can shut down much of the government for a while and people can behave normally, but you know, the federal government is involved in a lot of things that have to do with our safety and welfare, primarily air travel. Yep. And when they're shutting down the flights, which is if anything is the heartbeat of American commerce, it's internet and air travel, those two things, I would think. When that's happening, and then when they're telling you you know, Mr. President, look at this map of where all these planes are. And they've all got to be at the right height so they don't run together. And we're down so many in the station in Jacksonville, Florida. Maybe we ought to do something. So in retrospect, that's why it happened. But I have, and why he had to do what he did. And I guess Pelosi, I credit her entirely and Schumer just there. But that's sort of, even though the Schumer did work
she
out a deal.
She had the majority in the House that could hold them.
But I think together. But what she did, because I was not the only person of a left or center persuasion saying along the way, hey, let's negotiate. We don't care that much about a few sections of wall. Let's get this over with because it could turn on us. She was told that. I was the only one saying that. She was told that by someone in her own caucus. And she said, would you stick with me? I know what I'm doing here. This thing is, we're going to have this man reduced to mush in a few days. And that's, I've never seen as decisive a political trouncing as this. And I would simply counsel that these things change. As I say in Sunday's column, when all of the politics is at the extremes, then the weight is on the ends of the seesaw. So it goes up and down like this. Don't you like that metaphor?
That's a great metaphor.
Thank you very much. What I don't have an insight, I try to make up for with metaphor.
You got a visual going in.
Right. I did it like this.
Visual medium.
So, but beware. Things could change in 2 or 3 weeks. But, well, go ahead. Ask your question.
Well, I was just going to say, what do you predict will happen by the end of this 3-week period?
Well, I think we should probably ask you what you predict will happen.
You're the pundit.
The president yesterday.
You can always come back and fix whatever it is that you say.
You know, by conventional thinking, Trump would accept that he really blew this. He had no end game, and that the shutdown was unpopular, and that it's all on him, and he would take his losses. And he would get whatever little semantic thing, and this whole conference thing is going to be largely about semantics. They're going to put some more money into actual border security technology and those sorts of things. But if he could get a section of this settlement from this conference that says wall repair to existing wall and expansions. If he could get those two words in there without any real definite, just he could use some of it to put some wall somewhere, he could claim victory. But I don't know if he's got the people in the conference committee to get that meaningless semantic solution, whether he would accept it, whether Ann Coulter would ridicule him again, and whether that's a factor, which means the only other option, because he's not going to just cower and go away. The only other option is he declares a national emergency and uses his and presumes to use executive power, and then we litigate that.
Yeah.
And that's
not a solution.
No, either a semantic trick that lets him save a little bit of face, or he does that. And you know, by definition, you cannot say, by definition, we're going to sit around here for 2 or 3 weeks and then decide whether this is an emergency. That doesn't make sense.
If it's an emergency,
you needed to do something yesterday. You can't wait to decide whether it is.
I think the semantics
will work.
Will be the outcome.
I think if he will.
And perhaps some of that is just wishful thinking on my part. I would prefer that the semantics be the right solution so that we can all move along.
The answer to all this.
And keep going.
The answer to the political games our parties play is mostly political window dressing. And everybody knows the Democrats have won this. And if Trump can have a prepositional phrase or two words in this outcome that lets him point to something, fine.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat-Gazette. His columns can also be found at arkansasonline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics. More from their conversation can be found at talkbusiness.net.
Walton Arts Center presents Dorrance Dance, Tuesday, February 12th at 7 p.m., This New York City-based tap dance company presents ETM Double Down, a piece created in 2016 using contemporary music accompanied by the dancers' percussive beats. 8 dancers, 3 musicians, and a night of contemporary tap dance. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. 91.3 is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, presenting Men of Steel, Women of Wonder, a new exhibition featuring Superman and Wonder Woman as seen by the art world through more than 70 works by a wide range of artists. Opening on February 9th. More information at crystalbridges.org.
In our second half hour this Tuesday, The Militant Grammarian has a plan.
We were setting up a nonprofit organization.
Okay.
For people who love grammar and wordplay.
Good thing it's nonprofit. A nonprofit plan and the tricky business of group possessives. That's ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
Today's morning routine was just like yesterday's. Same toothpaste, same breakfast. But what was happening in the world outside your door was anything but ordinary. Progress, unrest, lives changed forever. Every weekday starts out the same until you listen. Turn on Morning Edition and the world will open up before your ears in a way that opens your eyes. Start every day fully awake with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is John Jetter, who is the musical director and conductor of the Fort Smith Symphony. Welcome back.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine.
Moss never grows under your feet, but this has been an extremely busy last couple of years.
Yes, it has.
And Exhibit A is this still shrink wrap CD I have in my hand of music from Florence Price recorded by the Fort Smith Symphony.
That's right. It's very exciting. That was released on January 11th. It is a recording that we made last May after our All Florence Price concert season concert closer of her first and fourth symphonies. This is on Naxos International. They're the largest classical label in the world, and we've been very thrilled, as has the label been, I think, on an incredible amount of national press. It's been pretty amazing.
Recently, it was featured on All Things Considered on NPR.
Yeah, on the news, the regular news. Yes, exactly. A number of public radio stations across the country have contacted us about doing nice segments. We've done a lot of interviews. We were featured pretty recently in the New York Times on, like, classical music this week. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of coverage also before, like, this recording's coming out soon. There was a nice article in the Wall Street Journal. And, of course, some of this also started about a year ago in conjunction with Ergene Kong's Price Violin Concerto recordings. That got people interested in those articles talked about our recording project. And then there's a lot more to come still. We're approaching Black History Month. So there's a lot of interest there, and it's been nice. It's been a lot more than the traditional classical music sources, which we would expect in some form.
And as they say in the music business, or used to, it's charting well.
Yes, for a just straight down the middle symphony performing symphonies. Yeah, we had been in the first 2 weeks of the release. It was on Amazon's best-selling classical list, even number one. And it's nice. For us, it's wonderful because their list includes all the crossover recordings. So, yeah, that includes Andrea Bocelli and the two cellos and the 50 tenors and whatever else. So that was nice. The Peter, Paul, and Mary with Symphony CD. And it's charting really well on a lot of online places where you can purchase music, download music. And it is available anywhere. You can get it on Spotify, iTunes, and of course as a CD. We're still for classical music listeners, the CD is still a very realistic option.
Yes.
And they do buy them.
These are symphonies 1 and 4.
Yes.
From Florence Price.
Yes.
And the vast majority of people who will hear this recording are hearing these symphonies for the very first time.
That is correct, and in fact, the fourth symphony is a world premiere recording, and we did the world premiere this past May. And the fourth symphony was one of a number of her pieces that was found in that abandoned house in 2009, south of Chicago. And we're fortunate that the largest collection of her music is at the U of A here in Fayetteville in their special collections. So it just made sense once I had the opportunity with the help of James Greeson to come and take a look at the scores. I thought, what a great idea to record music by a native Arkansan.
Right.
And what's so interesting is if you think about classical music or concert music or symphonic music, one wouldn't think that Arkansas would have a tradition. But in fact, we are the home and adopted home of the two first African-American symphonic composers who were recognized as that, Florence Price and William Grant Still. William Grant Still was raised in Little Rock. He was born in Mississippi, but moved here when he was four. So, hey, we can adopt him.
And the Fort Smith Symphony also has a relationship.
Right. We recorded all of his symphony. We're the first orchestra to record all of his symphonies for Naxos. So this second project with Florence Price's music, that made perfect sense for us. It made perfect sense for the label. And yes, we are planning on a follow-up recording or two.
The Fourth Symphony is dated 1945?
Yes.
Tell me about the symphony.
We don't know why she wrote it. There was no planned performance of it, but it is completed in manuscript. We do know that as a composer, when she would write something and she would hear it performed, whatever, be a string quartet or whatever, she did a lot of revision. You know, once she had a chance to really hear it, she'd go back and, you know, tweak things. And in her first and third symphony, which are published pieces, you can see, you can tell in the editorial work that she likes to, you know, she's changed her mind on some things. So in the case of the fourth symphony, it's great. We're hearing these first thoughts. It's a very unique symphony. Her style in both symphonies, you know, it's very influenced by Austro-Germanic music, of course, but it's about the American experience totally.
This was recorded in May over 2 days.
Yes.
Inside ArcBest?
Yes.
What's that like?
Well, we're so fortunate. This is our fourth recording for Naxos, fourth time we've worked with Tim Handley, who's the producer for these, recording engineer. Tim, I wish I knew the exact figure. I think he's won 11 Grammys as a recording engineer.
I think he quit counting after 8.
Yeah, you quit counting, right. I think he's up to about 450 recordings.
Wow.
So just fantastic. He's based in London. And boy, first of all, working with him it's a lot of fun. Really. He makes it, he's super efficient. He has an incredible ear. Very professional, but also very, very open. He has a great way of working with you. So basically, in the case of this recording, we had rehearsed it and performed it. So we were ready to go for the sessions. We had scheduled, like our previous recordings, 4 3-hour sessions. We probably could have done it in 3 sessions, because the last session we had over half of it was we left early, and the other sessions we kind of had a good wrapping up place before they were finished. So the recording went very smoothly, and there were a number of situations where we would play a rather large section, and he would say, well, okay, can you do that again? And we would do it again, and then we'd move on to something else. So the orchestra did a great job, and the level of the orchestra has gone up so dramatically. When I think about the first recordings and all the takes, there were things we had to do a number of times, even in this one, but that's very common. We were able to, though, keep it very fresh. I think if you listen to it, it does sound like a performance. It sounds like the way we did it in concert, which is wonderful.
There was a recent New York Times article about this small town in Italy where Stradivarius violins are, and they're trying, before they're aged past their prime.
Oh.
They're trying to record every possible sound they make
okay.
to preserve them.
That's right.
And this town, the small village, has to be quiet. Like, no traffic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
People
I think
are
I saw,
whispering.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, do you have to go to, obviously you didn't stop traffic in downtown Fort Smith, but do you go to any special requirements to make sure that nothing rumbles through the walls while you're recording?
For the very first recording that we made for them, for Knoxville, we actually did have traffic rerouted.
Oh, wow.
And we even put the entire audience area where the chairs were, we actually put wood. We got Home Depot to let us borrow like tons of these huge sheets of wood. And anyway, we found over the course of the recordings that we don't have to do any of that. And the recording equipment now is terrific. It's HD equipment, and it's very realistic, but some of the extraneous noises outside of what happens on stage are not quite as much of a problem. And I'm trying to think, there were maybe just a couple of times where we had to stop because a semi drove by or something like that. But two of the sessions were on Sunday, so it was less busy downtown. And I think the other sessions were kind of, you know, we kind of did it during the one and during the day and one in the evening. So we were able to sort of avoid some of the traffic.
Among the thank yous on the CD, special collections at Mullins Library,
yes.
where her papers are, James Greeson, who's done so much to bring her into the forefront.
Absolutely.
But also Mercy Fort Smith.
Yes. Wow. And we've talked about this on air before. Mercy Hospital, Mercy Clinics, they're terrific sponsors. And we've been involved in music and health with them. And they're very interested also in addressing health concerns by people who, you know, can't afford it. A lot of these silent voices that are kind of having a hard time in healthcare. We have these problems. Can we address all these different things in health? So they're kind of interested in people and voices that have not been heard before. And we had a number of sponsors for that last concert where we performed her music, but they were the main concert sponsors. So that concert rehearsal and concert experience really prepped us for this recording. The other thank you is Miho Sasaki.
Yes.
She is a wonderful Japanese composer. I've known her for years. She was the one who took pictures of the Fourth Symphony of the score and made score in parts for us. And that included a huge amount of detective work because it's a very beautiful score at first. And then when you're starting to put every note on a finale program, on a computer program, you realize, well, what, is that a B or a C? Or is that an F sharp? I can't tell if that's a sharp sign or a natural sign. So she had to do a lot of that. We had to do a huge amount of it. There's 10 pages of corrections from that I wrote up based on looking at that manuscript. So it was a challenge.
You've been at the Fort Smith Symphony 26 years.
22 years. This is my
22nd. I'm sorry.
Yes, okay.
That's right, 22. 22.
Okay.
All right. This would be the same, I think, if you were in Flagstaff or Muncie or anywhere in the middle of the country. We have a tendency to be overlooked, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to certain aspects of cultural life.
Yes.
Could you have imagined 22 years ago when you came to Fort Smith, this city that is in the middle of the country, that you'd be able to be on a number one, you know, behind a project that's a number one CD, to have world premieres? Could you imagine that? And what does that say about the support the symphony has?
It's been really funny in the course of these interviews and for like Fanfare Magazine and these other, you know, the East Coast public stations, they nicely ask the question mm-hmm. of how is this happening there? And it's a terrific way, including one was my favorite was, you know, how is happening? And before you answer that, could you please tell our listeners where Fort Smith is. You know, it's like, you want to, and I understand. I totally understand. There's a little part of me going, you know, and I wanted to say, well, it's where the awesome people are. Just look at awesome on the map. But, yeah, it's been a great thing to have this opportunity to talk about this tremendous support for the arts and quality, and specific with Fort Smith. There's always been a lot of support for the symphony. Fort Smith has certainly seen its up and downs economically. I think, as you know, there's a huge push right now, and sort of there's so much construction going on down there. There's a lot of entrepreneurial interest in Fort Smith, so this ties in so well with that. And I have to say, although I didn't have everything specific when I first came here, there was a lot of things that I wanted to do that I thought would be really good for the community. And if anything, I'm not surprised that we're doing so many projects that are really helpful for the community as a whole. And like, this project was great on so many levels, you know, everything from promoting Arkansas culture to promoting Fort Smith to just being a neat artistic statement. And I think one of the big factors has been trying to use the symphony now for years and years and years as a community resource that happens to play music. Now, it doesn't mean music is not our first thing.
Sure.
But there's so many things you could do with an orchestra besides just giving concerts. So, and doing projects like this, and you know, we've done so many other things, and, you know, electronic string quartet and jazz and all that stuff. So that's been really a fun thing. And I appreciate everyone's willingness to be interested in that. And Fort Smith's willingness to an interest in going to concerts where they're all really different, where they love the variety. They like the fact that we're doing all these neat things.
The new CD release on Naxos is Florence Beatrice Price. I didn't know her middle name.
Yeah.
Florence Beatrice Price. Symphony is number 1 in E minor, number 4 in D minor, as performed by the Fort Smith Symphony. John Jetter, congratulations. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And you can hear more from John Jetter tonight on Of Note with Katie Hendrickson. He'll talk with Katie about the joys, challenges, and processes of creating an entire symphony season. Plus, Katie will feature music from the new CD from the Fort Smith Symphony and more music from the Highlands Oncology Music Library at KUAF. The state's only daily, locally produced classical music show, Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, begins tonight at 8 on 91.3.
The 5th Annual Afternoon of Fairy Tales is Saturday, February 2nd from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Bentonville Community Center. This costume-encouraged event includes superhero games, music, crafts, food, and characters from a faraway land. Proceeds provide advocacy services for Restoration Village. RestorationVillage.net for tickets and more information. 91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville, open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com.
And tomorrow on a Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large, a variety show that takes a bit of old-time radio, a bit of Ed Sullivan, and a whole bunch of the Arkansas River Valley. Local Color is staged a few times every year with comedy, with history, and with music.
I got the key to the highway. Build out and bound to go. I'm gonna leave here running. Walking is most too slow.
Local Color, creating entertainment for live audiences in Fort Smith and helping raise money and awareness for the Fort Smith Museum of History. We had a bit of Local Color in the Furman Gardner Performance Studio recently, and we'll have a sample on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF, and then later available at ozarksatlarge.com.
Play it, Joe.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio are Milton Grammarian, Catherine Sherrills.
Hey.
Hello.
Kyle, I had a dream about you and me the other night.
You never know how to answer
or
respond when someone
says
that.
Well, we were setting up a nonprofit organization.
Okay.
For people who love grammar and wordplay.
Good thing it's nonprofit.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay.
We agreed to call it the Northwest Arkansas Logophiles Society. Logophile means lover of words.
We agreed to that?
Okay. Yeah,
all right.
We probably argued. Actually, okay. We did get into an argument.
All right.
And the argument was whether there should be an apostrophe in logophiles.
Oh, I'm so happy we're coming to this.
And if so, where should it be? So what are the three options that we could spell logophiles?
Okay, logophiles could just be with an S as a plural.
Mm-hmm.
There's more than one logophile.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are both in here, logophiles.
Right.
Then there's the Logophiles Association. There's a bunch of us. The association begins S, so S apostrophe.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Now, I'm trying to think of why we would go apostrophe S.
If you wanted to make it personal to each person who joined, I suppose. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, okay.
Chicago Manual of Style suggests that writers omit the apostrophe in proper names, often corporate names, or where there is no clear possessive meaning. So Publishers Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a weekly owned by publishers. It's
right.
a weekly for publishers.
Right.
Diners Club. The diners don't own the club.
Right. That's just the name.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And Department of Veterans Affairs. That there's no apostrophe in that.
No, there's not. And that's sometimes I have to go back and check.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But the veterans don't own the affairs.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But it really isn't even that easy. Let's take Mother's Day.
I didn't think it was that easy. Okay, Mother's Day.
Yeah. Is it a day to honor all mothers or just simply your mother?
Well, it could depend on context, right?
Well, but if you're right, you don't go
no,
use
you're
context
right, you're
when
right.
you're writing.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would say it's to honor all mothers. And if it's honoring all mothers, then it should be S apostrophe.
Do the mothers own the day? I mean, not in a, I mean.
Right.
You know
no.
I mean. Yeah.
Right. No.
So Merriam-Webster Collegiate Dictionary says the noun mother should be a singular possessive. Now, how do you spell a singular possessive?
So that'd be mother apostrophe S.
Right. Perhaps to acknowledge the fact that each person owns his or her own mother. So it's like my Mother's
right.
Day.
Right.
Same's true for Father's Day. On the other hand, Webster's tell us that in the United States, November 11th is known as Veterans Day, plural but not possessive.
Interesting.
So the veterans don't own the day. It's a day in which we honor all veterans.
Okay. Okay.
And since we're honoring all veterans, you'd think we would use the plural possessive, but the style books prefer veterans with no apostrophe.
Just plural.
By the way, I'll issue a spoiler here. The real answer to all these questions is look them up in a style book or a dictionary.
Right.
But you and I wouldn't find the name of our newly formed organization in a reference book
because
we're making
formed.
It up.
Right.
Yeah. So we could argue that the society belongs to a group of logophiles, and how would we spell that if it belonged to them?
S apostrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because it's all of them.
Yes, and they possess with the apostrophe, right? Or we could simply say that it's a society for them, spelling logophiles with no.
Exactly. But that's up to us, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the good thing, is we get to decide.
Right.
Well, I woke up from my dream before we decided, but as you said, we could have decided on any spelling and been correct, because the founders of a new organization, they get to decide how to handle the title. Most organizations omit the apostrophe and treat the noun as attributive rather than possessive, suggesting that the organization or conference does not belong to a group, but instead exists to serve its members.
Of the people, for the people, by the people.
Right. Yeah.
Gotcha.
To determine whether a noun is attributive, look to see if the relationship between the plural head noun, logophiles, mm-hmm. and the second noun, society, could be expressed by the prepositions for or by rather than the possessive of. Okay. So for these organizations, Kyle, is it possessive or attributive? Carpenters Union.
Is attributive.
Yes.
Yes.
Even though you might want to say, well, it's a union of carpenters. Yeah, but we don't mean it in the right. possessive way.
Right.
New York Mets first baseman.
That would be attributive. Mm-hmm. Right.
First All baseman for right. the Mets. Right. So you wouldn't have any right. punctuation in
right.
Mets.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Final point.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I agree with that. But the
if you said the Mets season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, gotcha.
Right.
Right.
You would have an apostrophe.
Yes.
Then, yeah.
Final, okay, but uh-huh. would it be the Mets season, would it be apostrophe S or S apostrophe? Because it could be either, right? You could be talking about the 25 players
yeah.
season,
yeah.
S apostrophe,
yeah.
but it could be just the one organization, the Mets season.
Isn't the organization called Mets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
okay, okay, okay.
Yeah. The only way you could do that would be if you were calling one guy a Met.
Yeah, you're right, you're right, yeah. okay.
The final point, if the plural noun does not end in S,
mm-hmm.
such as children, women, and men,
mm-hmm.
the constructions are almost always treated as possessive.
Right.
No matter what the logic would dictate. So it's a children's home.
And apostrophe S.
Uh-huh.
The women's movement.
Yes, and a men's chorus.
Right.
Yeah. And as for the name of our society, Kyle, let's sleep on it.
Agreed. Catherine Sherrills is the co-founder of the Logophiles Association and our militant grammarian. This is Ozarks at Large. We're having our fun with Charlie Chaplin in the region lately. The Fort Smith Symphony performed music for Chaplin's classic City Lights earlier this month. And now, tomorrow evening, we'll hear how a lost Chaplin film was discovered among Chaplin outtakes. Frank Scheid, professor in the University of Arkansas Department of Communication, will explain how he discovered outtakes from the Chaplin film King, Queen, Joker, a 1919 movie produced by Chaplin's brother, Sidney. Scheid discovered the film while researching in London at the invitation of the British Film Institute. And his public talk about the experience and the film, tomorrow evening, beginning at 6, at the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History on the Fayetteville Square. That discussion is free and open to the public. The Rogers Public Education Foundation will honor the memory of a former educator with the organization's second Legacy Award. That honor will be given to Greer Lingle, superintendent of Rogers Public Schools, for nearly 30 years in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. The Legacy Award is annually given to a deceased graduate or educator from the Rogers School District. His family will accept the award on his behalf at the 2019 Wall of Distinction Banquet in April. Today is National Plan for Vacation Day, and state tourism officials are encouraging Arkansans to do just that. It's part of a national effort to raise awareness of the benefits of taking time off. Joy Barlagee, Research and Development Manager for Arkansas Tourism, says all total unused vacation days in the United States amount to a $236 billion economic opportunity.
People leave thousands of hours on the table every year that go unused as far as vacation days are concerned. And we know how important it is to take those vacation days, obviously, to support an industry, but also, you know, just for your well-being. It's important that people know that, you know, you're actually a bit more productive if you've taken that time off.
The U.S. Travel Association says more than half of Americans fail to use all of their vacation time every year, totaling 662 million unused vacation days. Ideas for vacations in the natural state can be found at arkansas.com. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith is offering working adults an opportunity to earn a bachelor's degree through a program that was announced yesterday. The Adult Degree Completion Program is designed to offer what UAFS officials label a streamlined educational pathway toward a degree in either organizational leadership or general studies. UAFS is awarding credit for prior learning to eliminate duplication of a student's educational effort to shorten the time required to earn the degree. The program is open to returning students with at least 30 credit hours. The Arkansas Razorback softball team is entering the 2019 season with its highest ever preseason national ranking, 14th. That rating today comes from the USA Today NFCA preseason coaches poll. Arkansas finished the 2018 season ranked 16th in the country after advancing to the super regional stage of the NCAA tournament. The season will open February 8th at a tournament in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and the first home game of the year will be February 21st against Southeast Missouri State at Bogle Park in Fayetteville. Arkansas is one of nine SEC teams to be placed in the preseason top 25 poll.
Tomorrow on the Community Spotlight.
I'm very proud to be a part of Washington Regional and to be have the opportunity to work with volunteers. We have gift shop volunteers. The gift shop was built by the hospital, but is owned and operated by the auxiliary. And the auxiliary purchases all the merchandise, and it is manned by volunteers.
Jimmy Beecham talks to us about volunteer opportunities at Washington Regional Medical Center. The Community Spotlight, tomorrow morning, 6:30 and 8:30 on KUAF.
And you can keep up with the news in our region and our state every weekday morning at 5:30 and 7:30 with Antoinette Grajeda. She delivers those newscasts every weekday morning on 91.3. The Arkansas Game and Fish Commission is launching a program in Northwest Arkansas to help private property owners control nuisance feral swine. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Feral swine, a non-native invasive species, are causing agricultural losses, forest damage, water pollution, and wildlife habitat destruction in a majority of counties in Arkansas, according to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. Introduced to North America by European settlers as livestock and later released into the wild for sport hunting, Eurasian wild boars reproduce quickly and are spreading across the southeastern U.S. State game and fish wildlife biologist Richard Bowen, headquartered at Beaver Dam State Park, is working with affected property owners across northwest Arkansas.
Carroll County does have quite a population of them, it seems like, right now. So that's where a lot of our efforts have been here recently. But we've assisted landowners in Washington County as well and Madison County also.
The Arkansas Game and Fish Commission is a member organization of the Arkansas Feral Hog Eradication Task Force, charged with controlling nuisance swine.
We try to work with folks especially that are near one of our wildlife management areas that are, you know, a public property, because if we catch the hogs off their property, that's going to prevent them from getting onto the public property and causing an issue on the management area. But we don't, you know, exclusively just assist those folks. We try to assist anybody that's having issues with them.
Landowners with a feral hog problem who need help are first asked to provide photographic evidence using game cameras and bait.
And then based on that, we'll go where we're needed the most, really, and try to focus on, obviously, the females that have piglets, because those are the ones that are going to be increasing the population the most versus groups of young boars or individual boars traveling alone like that.
Hunting experts say only disperse swine herds. Instead, Bowen will set up baited staked corral traps, mobile circular fencing with sliding trap doors, which he remotely monitors.
There's a camera set up that goes with each trap that operates very similarly to how a home security system camera would work. It's on a pole on an elevated position to where it can look down, have a good vantage point into the trap. And when it detects motion inside the trap, it sends me a notification on my phone, and I can pull up the camera and view what's inside the trap live via a live stream video. And then if it's deer or raccoons, some kind of a non-target animal, we just let them go. They just come and leave as they wish. But if it is the hogs that we want and they're all inside the trap, we're ready to go, I can activate the gates from my phone just by pushing a button, and it drops both gates simultaneously.
Caught animals are euthanized, he said, hauled off and incinerated to deter the spread of disease. Feral swine carry bacteria and parasites. According to a National Wildlife Research Center survey, feral hogs have caused $20 million in crop losses across Arkansas. Swine are known to wallow pastures, roads, and riparian zones and consume ground-nesting bird eggs. Nearly 70% of hog populations must be removed annually just to prevent swine herds' expansion. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Contributors to this edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda and Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show. Our conversation with Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette was recorded in the KATV studios in Little Rock. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Churld's. Additional content for today's show provided by KUAR. Public Radio in Little Rock. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can often find Daryl playing live on Facebook and Instagram. He can also be found at DarylSean.com, or at least the digital version of Daryl, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Montanay. Quick programming note, 1 week from tonight, the State of the Union will be delivered. A week later than first expected because of the government shutdown, KUAF and NPR will provide live coverage of the president's address and the Democratic Party response. That's 1 week from tonight, live coverage on KUAF beginning at 8 o'clock. We will end this edition of Ozarks at Large with music from one of our favorite duos in the whole world, Still on the Hill. They will perform Thursday night at the Lyric Theater in downtown Harrison, beginning at 7. This is a rescheduled show that had been postponed because of weather. This will be the next presentation of their Cane Hill show, and it is free. The first 100 families at the Lyric on the Harrison Square Thursday night receive a copy of Still on the Hill's Cane Hill CD. Then Saturday, Kelly and Donna will present another Cane Hill show, this one at the Bentonville Public Library beginning Saturday afternoon at 2. Same deal. It's free to get in. 100 free CDs available. And you know what? If you want to drive to Belton, Texas next month, they'll be offering their yearly annual concert and workshop at Mary Hardin Baylor University on February 14th. All of this information and much more available at stillonthehill.com. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. You can always find us online at ozarksatlarge.com. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Pork chop bong, whittle for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, it like a sound when them old parts jiggle. Oh. Well, years ago, Ed said to me that back around 1983 that the Lord gave him a special vision showing him his life's mission. So he made guitars and he gave them away. He never took a dime for pay. He'd get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then he'd sing and whistle. Pork chop bone, whittle for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, it like a sound when them old parts jiggle. Oh, here we go.
Okay, everybody whistle.
Stilly, he's a clever man. He used whatever he had on hand, pots and pans and metal things, to help him make them guitars ring. Well, he taught me that I could do most anything I wanted to. I just get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then I'll sing and I'll whistle. Pork chop bone, whittle for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, it like a sound when them old parts jiggle. Whoa.